Captain's log, stardate 41153.7. Our destination is planet Deneb 4, beyond which lies the great unexplored mass of the galaxy. My orders are to examine Farpoint, a starbase built there by the inhabitants of that world. Meanwhile, I am becoming better acquainted with my new command, this galaxy-class USS Enterprise. I am still somewhat in awe of its size and complexity. As for my crew, we are short in several key positions, most notably a first officer, but I am informed that a highly experienced man, one Commander William Riker, will be waiting to join the ship at our Deneb 4 destination.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske File and the first real episode of this Penske Watches, or whatever we want to call it, Star Trek The Next Generation podcast / video series. We're starting off here with Encounter at Farpoint, which was the very first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was written by DC Fontana and Gene Roddenberry. It was directed by Corey Allen and it aired all the way back in September 28th, 1987. So a very long time ago, almost 30 years at this point as we're sitting here in 2014. But Encounter at Farpoint was the premiere episode. It aired as a two-hour special, basically, and later on it was split into two episodes, which we will now start calling episodes one and two. So the third episode we'll consider the episode after this, which is The Naked Now. But the rough breakdown of the plot is... So the year is 2364, and the USS Enterprise is the new flagship of the Federation. It's sent on its maiden voyage to travel to Deneb 4, both to pick up crew members that are left to fill the ranks of the ship, and to open, I guess, what they consider relationships with the people called the Bandy, who have somehow managed to build a Farpoint station that is, for some reason or another, which we'll discuss, surprising to the Enterprise crew. So as they're heading there... the Enterprise meets Q for the first time, who is a godlike member of the Q Continuum, which is a race of aliens that are basically gods, can do whatever they want, and Q would continue on to be a recurring character across the series. But anyway, Q meets them and puts them into a mock trial, kangaroo trial type thing, where he is the judge, jury, and executioner, I suppose, of humanity. He puts humanity on trial. Then he decides, as a test, he will let them go to Farpoint and see if they can solve the mystery of Farpoint Station. And if they can't, then he will judge them as unfit for existence, I suppose. So the Enterprise arrives at Farpoint Station. They pick up the rest of the crew, which includes Riker and Dr. Crusher and everything like that. And they go down, and Deanna Troi, the empath, senses that something unusual about the space station, senses a lot of pain and despair on the station. And no one can understand it. There's a lot of mysterious things going on. People ask or think about things, and then all of a sudden appear. And so it's all very, very mysterious. And then all of a sudden, a alien spaceship appears and starts attacking Farpoint Station. Farpoint Station is under attack, and the leader of Farpoint Station is abducted by the alien ship. So the Enterprise sends an away team over to the alien ship. They rescue the leader of the Bandy, and they discover that the alien ship is very similar to Farpoint Station. And as they rescue the Bandy leader, and then it's revealed and figured out that the Farpoint Station is actually an alien, just like this alien ship is actually an alien. They're basically space jellyfish. And the creature that is turned into Farpoint Station was captured or tended to by the Bandy, who realized that they could use it to make whatever they wanted out of this station, and then they would be assured, I guess, to get back into the Federation's good graces. And so they kept the thing alive, basically enough to suit their own needs. Picard figures this out, directs somebody to shoot an energy beam at the station. The station is fully healed, turns into another space jellyfish, and the space jellyfish fly off. And Q has been watching this whole thing. He sees this as a reason, or I guess he sort of reluctantly tells them that they have passed their test, and he's going to keep his eye on humanity. And the Enterprise flies off into the far reaches of the galaxy with Riker asking Picard if everything is going to be this like that mission, and Picard tells him, no, some of them are going to be exciting. So that's it. So let's break down this episode and counter at Farpoint.
You will now answer to the charge of being a grievously savage race.
All right, so where to start with Encounter at Farpoint? I guess it's the opening is, I guess, as good a place as any to start, but it starts off with a very dramatic shot of Picard standing in the dark, giving his captain's log explanation, which is usually how the episodes open, with someone in command explaining what is going on in a paragraph or two. And it cuts into... I guess it's one of the weird things that I noticed was just how dark everything is in these early episodes. The show, I think, brightened up a little bit, but they were certainly, I don't know if they were trying to disguise some cheapness of the set. For how expensive the show was to air, I guess it was given a low budget when all things were considered about what to do. So there was a lot of reusing sets. And you can tell in a lot of the shots, there's a lot of shots they are trying to demonstrate what the Enterprise looks like. And I think it happens when Picard and Riker both enter the bridge. I think it's Riker anyway, but they basically have a point of view shot from the camera where the camera is showing what the bridge looks like, what the layout is. And you can tell, I think they obviously were running low on money. It's one of those things you notice in how to save money in different shots on a show would be to limit the lighting changes that you have to do. Because moving lighting, if you've ever filmed any sort of video, lighting is like key to any sort of video or filming or whatever. But it costs a lot of time, salary, and effort to move the lights around. So all the scenes where they have this point of view shot is you can see the shadows on the wall, which is something you don't really notice in a lot of TV shows because they usually have the time to set things up. But they obviously shot this very quickly. There's dark shadows everywhere, and the lighting looks very on set as for how things look. I guess it was necessary to explain what the ship looked like, but it definitely distracts you in how poor some of the lighting quality is. But anyway, they come out and you meet, I think it's Picard, Data is there, and Troy on the Enterprise. And they are waiting to head off on their maiden voyage, which is to this Deneb 4, the Farpoint station. And I guess immediate thoughts would just be the uniforms are extremely poor fitting. Data, when he's sitting down, looks like he has breasts, is the best way I can use to describe it. His uniform is very bunched. They don't have the collars yet. And Troy is wearing a skirt outfit, which is kind of the one of the themes of what this episode looked like. It's a weird holdover from what Roddenberry started out as when he had such a large impact on the first season or two, at least. I think it all changed in season 3. But he was definitely present for the first couple seasons, and he has this aesthetic of the old style of Star Trek. So women are usually wearing skirts. There's a lot of sort of theatrical acting, and the writing is pretty poor, if I had to say so. It was Roddenberry and his D.C. Fontana, who was his secretary for the original series and then turned on to a staff writing position, wrote this one, and it definitely feels old. It's a old show that has a lot of bizarre acting from Troy. I think Troy's acting and character work sort of came together later on, but it's a lot of her pseudo-orgasming as she's telling people that she feels something, and Picard sort of like stares at her with this despondent look in his eyes. But anyway, we meet Data. They do their Data does his introduction by way of not understanding what the word snoop means, which is kind of a strange way to break in the character. He's an all-knowing android that apparently you would think would have learned every single dictionary by every single alien species, but he does not know the word snoop, although he knows every other word that you would look in the thesaurus and find out what snoop means, to spy, to-duh. And Picard is immediately angry with him and shuts him down. And the other thing that I noticed about the show, which is funny, is that everyone is on a hair trigger in these early episodes. They kind of calm down later on, but Picard in particular is immediately wrathful and sort of angry and yelling about whenever things go wrong. He yells at Worf at one point, yells at Riker. He yells at a lot of different people sort of abruptly. The character would change and not do that as much later on. He was more calm. He would still get angry later on, but he wasn't to the point of just freaking out and losing his shit, especially when Wesley Crusher appears on the bridge at a later point. But Picard doesn't like kids, but he immediately is very hostile to a kid who seems to know a lot about his ship, when the captain doesn't seem to know all that much about it at that point, and responds with utter hostility towards poor Wesley Crusher, who we'll discuss later on, I think, as the hard to understand and mostly disliked character of Wesley Crusher. So yeah, you notice the writing isn't very subtle. You notice the acting isn't very subtle. There's a lot of characters who don't seem to be doing anything. This point, Geordi and Worf are noticeably useless. They're just sort of out there. I think Worf was intended to be a just background character. And eventually when Tasha Yar, I think Yar is there at this early point, when Tasha Yar eventually leaves the show, Worf gets a bigger role. So they meet the Q creature, who appears as a conquistador for whatever reason, then changes into what I assume is a World War II outfit. He basically tells them that humanity is a despicable species, yada, yada, yada. He's going to put them on trial. And he traps them in a very cheesy-looking snare energy field. He traps the ship in this very cheesy-looking thing. And the ship tries to outrun it. They run away. They want to... they do something that they do prominently in this first episode and then immediately fades away. Picard orders the saucer separation, which is this ship can apparently, the saucer of the ship can separate from the warp drive section of the ship, and people on the saucer can get away while this, what they call the battle drive, goes back and can deal with whatever dangers that there is. So I guess you don't leave all the families in danger. They do this for this episode. I think they might do it one other time. And I think about 7 minutes of the episode is dedicated to the saucer separation. You can tell this is where a lot of the budget went. And they abandoned it later on in the series. It's not worth it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it is too costly and takes up too much time, basically. It was another thing, I would think. But in a very un-Picard-like fashion, he orders the saucer separation at warp speed, which Data says is not a good idea, but Picard is basically insistent on doing this. And it's one of the weird things about the Picard character at this early level. He's very much more like Kirk, and it's that Roddenberry influence. He's more of a cowboy. He's not as much of a cowboy as Kirk is, but he is definitely not willing to listen to other opinions when he makes his decision. He'll listen to them, but he ultimately will decide what to do. When Data tells him not to separate at warp, it is with this sort of tone that it's like, this is definitely not a good idea. And they do it anyway. And after 7 minutes of watching the ship separate, Worf is left with the saucer section against his wishes. Picard, Data, and Troy and Yar go to the battle bridge. And there's a, you know, during the 7 minutes, we see all the families on the Enterprise. There's a guy in a dress who is leading them to safety on the saucer section. So it gives you, I guess, an idea that there's families on the ship. It's not just a war vessel or like the original series. It's not just a ship on a 5-year mission with no families or anything. But this is actually basically a tiny town that is filled with families that shouldn't be put into danger. So the saucer flies off. The battle drive goes back to deal with Q. And Q captures humanity and puts them into a 21st century... I didn't realize this until later. I thought this was some sort of nonsense. He puts them into a 21st century trial, which I guess is supposed to be after World War III, is what humanity was doing, which is a comically odd setup because there are a lot of bad costumes. There are guys who seem to be wearing like bulletproof Kevlar with machine gun hands. And there are people dressed as like what you can only describe as like 16th century Asian princes. They have a very Asian look, and then there are people who are dressed as if they are paupers in Russia in the early 1600s or something. It's a strange mix. I thought it was, the first couple times before realizing and watching this time, I thought it was just a Q's sort of bizarre mix-up of everything, but apparently this is what people wore in the after the Third World War, which is supposed to be humanity's darkest period, I guess, is what Picard is hinting at. So Q appears in his, I guess, official judge garb in a scene that is shot very strangely because Q is supposed to be levitating in a chair, but it's painfully obvious through some of the shots that he's basically on a forklift, and you can see it in some of the shots, and it's funny. And so they have to shoot the characters very closely. So there's a lot of bizarre angles and people not particularly looking at the camera, especially in the dialogue between Picard and Q. And there's a lot of very strange shots. You can tell they had to shoot around what they were doing, but there's also mixed in with the shots of Q coming in where you can actually see the little lift that he's on, which kind of ruins the imagery of him supposedly flying in as a godlike judge of humanity. But after torturing the crew, he freezes Yar, which seems to be a big thing. He froze someone else when Q showed up too. He freezes people. That's his way of dealing with people who talk back to him. Picard yells at him, says, "This is a sham, whatever. This is no good. We need less general charges against us." And so Picard asked for a test to test humanity to see if they're indeed what Q describes as aggressive and unscrupulous and basically a blight on the universe. And so Q grants him that wish, and he says that when they go to Farpoint, they're going to encounter a mystery, and how they handle that mystery is going to be their test to determine their punishment from Q. And so off they go. He sends them back to the ship, and they all reconvene. The saucer section and the star drive go back to Farpoint Station, which is on this Deneb 4. So we meet Riker, is the first crew member that we're picking up at the Deneb 4. It's Riker, and he's meeting with the Bandy leader. I think his name is Zorn or Zeb or something like that. But Riker is Groppler Zorn, which is a great, great sci-fi name. Riker meets with him, and he's in there, and the guy says, "Do you want some fruit?" He's in the office, and the Bandy leader Zorn says, "Do you want some fruit?" Riker says, "Do you have any apples?" And the guy says, "No, I don't have apples. I have this bowl of fruit that does not have an apple." And then they look back down again, and there's a bowl of apples sitting where there wasn't supposed to be a bowl of apples. Riker is sort of nonplussed by this, just kind of casually asks, I didn't think I saw those before. And he said, no. The Bandy guy insists that the apples were there. Riker's just imagining. So Riker gets a great scene where he gets to chomp on an apple as he's leaving the room with Zorn. And he shuts the door, as Zorn does. And then he starts yelling at the room to nobody in particular. "You can't act like this. You're going to make people suspicious. I've told you again, you will be punished if you keep doing this." And it's our first, I guess, implication that something is not as it seems at Farpoint Station. And Riker heads out into the Farpoint area, and he meets the Crushers for the first time. And or maybe Geordi wasn't there before. I think he meets Geordi too. And Geordi with his visor, and Crusher with her doctorate and her son, who is wildly annoying. And they have a very funny scene where Riker asks how the Crusher seems to know Picard. And Riker asks how that is. And Wesley Crusher somewhat awkwardly explains that Picard brought his father's dead body back to them. And that is the way that the Crushers seem to know Picard. So obviously they're friends from a distant past. Friends enough so that Picard would bring you the corpse of your father back to you, carrying it very dramatically, I'd assume. And Riker doesn't seem too affected by that. Doesn't seem too bothered by this strange kid who is annoying and wearing a gigantic sweater. Big sweater. Wesley Crusher was a fan of the big, big, big sweater. Geordi appears. He explains his visor, which is something that happens. It's one of the weird scenes in this thing. There are a lot of scenes in here where it's really sort of demonstrates like the bad writing that was going on. There are two scenes in particular that I can think of. The first one is Geordi explaining to Crusher his visor. The scene only exists as a reason to explain the visor and to not further the plot in any other sense. He's just sitting in sick bay and the doctor's asking him about it, and he explains why it helps him see. He's blind since birth. Doesn't do anything though, and you know, it's like writing 101 is that any scene in TV should probably advance the plot. If it doesn't advance the plot, there's no reason for it to be there, and you could probably introduce that information in a more natural way. And then the other one is later on at the end of the episode, Picard meets with Dr. Crusher in sickbay, and they have a conversation that really serves no purpose other than to explain their history with each other. Which doesn't really pan out in the series as much as I thought that they would want it to. But they basically explain that they know each other. It's awkward because Picard, he doesn't want the doctor to be uncomfortable dealing with the fact that he brought home her dead husband and something like that. And so Crusher reveals that she wanted to be there and she requested the assignment. And it's another bizarre scene that does nothing to further anything except to explain character backstory. And it definitely makes this episode feel a lot longer than it is. The movie, it's movie length, and it feels like it's like over 2 hours long when I was watching this. I was just, not a lot happens, very little. The story isn't particularly clue-laden or anything. It's really just a lot of meeting people, walking around, exploring the ship, explaining backstories, meeting Q, meeting the bandy, and then solving the mystery. But to get back to it, we have what's probably the best scene after that, which is the Bones and Data scene, where they're walking through, and the Doctor from the original series is on the ship for some reason, is an ambassador at this point. He's walking with Data, and they have a nice little cute scene where, you know, Bones explains that the ship's a lady, and treat her like a lady, and she'll be good to you, and all that stuff. And there's some nice music playing in the background as the old cast basically sends off the new cast in this way. And it's a very, it's a good Data scene. It's a good way to flesh out Data's character, which is sort of the inquisitive, you know, android, if you haven't picked up on this point. And he runs into this character who's very, you know, able to tie in Data's weirdness with the Vulcan weirdness of Spock. Yeah, it's nice. Nice little send-off, nice touch. Probably the best acting and writing in the entire episode, just because it makes sense in the context of all the characters. And after that, what is after that? Oh, Troy and Riker come back, or Riker comes back to the ship, which is what do they do? Well, I guess the ship, everyone on the surface of Farpoint is able to be picked up by the Enterprise, and so Troy and Riker meets on the bridge, or I guess Riker would come back. Yeah, Riker comes back before that. I'm stepping out of order here. I'm trying to remember how this went. But Riker does beam to the battle bridge before the ships recombine, I think, the saucer and everything. And there's the what was probably my favorite scene in this whole thing, just for how nonsensical it is and how bizarre. Riker appears on the battle bridge. Yar introduces him. Picard gives him the cold shoulder, basically. Doesn't really look at him when Riker enters, just says, "Welcome aboard, blah, 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 catch up." And so he instructs Riker to catch up on the goings-on, and he sits Riker in front of a TV set, and Riker basically watches a best-of clip show of the episode up until that point, which is hilarious because it's all shot it's the same takes as what actually is in the episode. So we get this weird, probably 30, 40 second long shot of Riker sitting in a chair watching a movie about like all the things that have happened to bring them to that point to get Q, the saucer separation and all that. When it seems like it would be much more efficient if someone could just tell him what was going on. But instead it has this very strange situation where you have to watch this awkward scene of Riker sitting, watching a movie, absorbing something from this, I guess, although it probably wouldn't make much sense at all if he weren't familiar with what had already happened. But he enjoys making Riker sit through this sort of nonsense. And the other bizarre, completely out of character Picard thing that happens is at this point, he instructs Riker to manually dock the saucer with the battle bridge section, which, judging by the reaction of everyone else on the crew, seems like it's a horrible, horrible idea, and this should be done automatically or automated systems. And Picard sort of wants to compare dicks, I guess, with Riker and sort of orders him to manually dock these ships, which I guess manually docking involves you standing next to the captain's chair and yelling orders at people about how to change. And the scene makes absolutely no sense. Picard doing this makes no sense. It's totally out of character with what he would become. The reaction of the crew makes it sound like this is a suicide mission. And it is basically bumping two ships into each other. There are thousands of people on this ship. And Picard is basically risking their lives to prove the mettle of his first officer. Everyone is horrified, holding their breath as this is going on. This complicated machinery has to line up perfectly as Riker stands there and tells people to move like 2% rotation counterclockwise off the aft and things just by staring at the screen. He doesn't have any information in front of him. And he's yelling orders at people. They dock. Everyone exhales. Riker puffs out his chest and Picard is very, very impressed with him. But it's a very original series idea for something like that to happen. That's not what Next Generation would become later on. It's totally out of Picard's character. He's basically risking the well-being of the ship just to have Riker show off his ability to stand confidently on the bridge and yell out orders. So after that, Riker and Data meet on the holodeck. You have that famous scene where Data's whistling or trying to whistle. It would come back in the Nemesis movie. Riker introduces himself. They're very pleased. There's a little bit of prejudice, I guess, or Data accuses humanity of prejudice against robots. And Riker agrees that that's probably true. So they go down to Farpoint. They're exploring. They want to bring the Bandy into their sort of the Federation. The Bandy have built the station that they want to sell to the Federation, I guess is my point. They introduce the Ferengi at this point, saying that the Ferengi have an offer on the table. And the Ferengi are a creation for the Next Generation, which they are sort of a failed invention. They were originally intended to be like the new main villain of the show, and they're supposed to be incredibly dangerous. And so they refer to them in this episode as cannibals. They eat people. And we don't see them, but we hear about them. And they were intended to be introduced as the series villain. And later on, when we actually run into the Ferengi, we'll see why that was a horrible idea. At least their design backfired on them. Because they eventually became comic relief on the in the Trek universe. Because they are goofy little goblins. And not the threat that anyone would seriously believe would be something dangerous to any of humans or any kind of ships. So they explore Farpoint. Troy starts freaking out because she senses great suffering and danger. The Bandy leader, Zorn, denies knowing what's going on. Can't explain any of this. He insists that Troy is there to read his mind. He's very worried. Obviously, he's doing his best bad acting to explain that he has nothing to hide, which is always that, what, me, who, what, So they all beam back. Crushes to the bridge, which is more just sort of character building scenes. Wesley Crusher enters the bridge, which Picard has previously explained to Riker that he hates children. And so Wesley, I don't know how old Wesley was, maybe like 13, something like that, 12? I don't know. I guess I could look that up. But he's young, he's a know-it-all, and he's kind of a douchebag, and he's kind of annoying. And Picard freaks out, says, get the hell off my bridge. Screams at the doctor and Wesley to get off his bridge when things start going wrong. But it's another just weird scene of pilot-y television where they're introducing people and showing backstories, showing their interactions that they're going to come by because Picard hates children. And after that, the strange ship appears. So an alien vessel appears, and they have no recollection or they have no information on what kind of ship this is. Picard thinks it might be the Ferengi, which is strange. I guess the Ferengi are so not well known that we don't know what their ships look like, and the ships eventually become very well known. So it's weird that the nemesis of the Federation is sort of unknown to people. This kind of happens a lot, I think, in the series. The ship starts attacking Farpoint, and the crew notices that the ship is attacking the settlements around Farpoint Station and not actually attacking Farpoint Station. Q appears, starts to haggle Picard, or not haggle, but sort of taunt him into taking action. What's he going to do? Do you remember that humanity is being judged on all this nonsense? And we cut back to the Farpoint Station. Data and Riker are on the ground. Apparently they've been hit by one of these blasts. They get up. They're fine. Data's okay. And they start to notice again that the settlements are not being attacked. The settlements are being attacked, not the actual Farpoint Station. The leader of the Bandy, this Zorn guy, is picked up by the alien ship. He's sort of teleported out of his office onto the ship. They send an away team over to the ship to rescue him. He is doing some goofy screaming acting in a force field. They turn down the force field. I think they shoot it with phasers, and the guy lands on a very convenient pile of pillows, so he's not injured. They rescue him, bring him back to the Enterprise, and at that point the crew starts telling Picard about all these strange things, that the ship has Troy senses that the ship is the same as Farpoint, it seems to be alive, there's no crew on board, and that they were getting great satisfaction from torturing Zorn. And so Picard, all of a sudden, Q appears, reappears again. Picard somehow figures out what's been done. He puts it all together. He realizes that Farpoint Station is an alien. It's a bit of a stretch in writing. They realize that they only had a couple minutes left of show. They need to just sort of get this through. Picard somehow realizes that the Farpoint Station is an alien, orders an energy beam to be shot into it, and it does. It heals the Farpoint Station. Farpoint Station and the alien ship turn into giant space jellyfish that fly up together, hold hands, and then fly off into the distance. And all of this is over Q, provoking the captain to attack the settlement, attack the ship, kill the bandy, all that good sense. And so the aliens fly off. Everyone's very happy. Q leaves, promises to return, although Picard, I guess, has bested him in this sense. And the crew blasts off again. So that was a somewhat longer breakdown of what was actually going on in the episode. I thought the episode was interesting. It's definitely hard to watch at this point. You know, I think of Star Trek when it gets to season 3, and we have a long way to go to get to that point. And the first and second seasons operate and feel very much like old Star Trek episodes. There's a lot of guest star interaction. There's a lot of sort of very highfalutin aliens, which Q is an example of. Q becomes sort of a better character as the thing goes on, but he's basically a god creature that can do whatever he wants. The setting of the trial is a little bit ridiculous. It's, you know, supposed to be World War III, post-World War III, I guess, but it looks comical. It looks very old, original series, and how the characters are dressed in sort of like whatever was, you know, on set that day, just people throw on different outfits, and it doesn't make any rhyme or reason or sense as to what's going on. And the acting is very theatrical. The direction is very theatrical, and the shooting is very simple. They were obviously trying to get through this as quickly as possible. There's not a lot of artistry in any of the shots. That kind of continues throughout the entire series. They're shooting a television show, and it's not Breaking Bad or anything. They're basically just shooting, you know, medium, establishing shots, medium, and then close-ups as they have conversations. But one thing, I guess, that did kind of catch me off guard was the number of point of view shots, which you talked about earlier. There's a lot of them, and I almost wish that the show had continued doing some kind of, you know, artistry with the shots that were going on in here, even though they don't look particularly nice in this. They look very on set, on a stage, on a soundstage. They're cool to sort of get perspective of how the ship looks and everything like that. And the characters, I was kind of surprised, you know, I haven't watched Encounter Farpoint in a long time. When I watch these shows on Netflix, I hardly ever go into the first two seasons. But I hadn't watched it in a long time, and it's kind of funny how close the characters are to what they become. They kind of modulate a little bit, like Picard doesn't yell as much in the later episodes as he does in this early episode. But for the most part, the characters are pretty similar to what they would be. Riker is the young not really a hothead, but so the brash leader, the Kirk type attitude. Picard is more thoughtful, but he's still a little bit angry in this. Data is acting more broadly than he would later on. His general mannerisms are all there. And the Data, you know, Data's acting actually has a justification in how you can explain character motivation when you can just say that he's, you know, as the show goes on, he learns more and more about humanity. And his acting would change in response to that as he would become more or less more human. And it does make, I don't think that's what, you know, the actor's initial thought would be. I don't think he imagined they were going to go 7 seasons and he's going to slowly develop this character. But he is playing Data more broadly and much more, you know, sort of stereotypically android. And that would eventually change, but at least there's justification for that. Worf is pretty much a nothing at this point. Geordi's a zero in terms of character. Crusher, this is probably one of the more Crusher-laden episodes. Dr. Crusher is probably one of my weaker characters on the show. I'll explain my tier system in a future episode, but Wesley Crusher is annoying. They would quickly sort of move on from him. Troy is overacting, but is largely the same. I think they toned down the sort of nonsense of her being sort of physically affected by her emotions. They keep that in some of the episodes in the future, but she is definitely reacting as though someone is performing surgery on her with no anesthesia. And a lot of it's just people sort of crowding around her, just asking her if she'll be okay. But for the most part, I was pretty impressed with how the characters worked out. You know, things are gonna mellow out. They'll start working. The show's gonna become more character based than it is in these early episodes. And for the most part, I was pretty impressed. I wouldn't watch this episode endlessly. I wouldn't. It's not a good Star Trek to sort of show somebody as to what the show would be. You obviously want to pick a later episode. As a pilot, it's okay. It's sloppy writing. It's sloppily shot. The actors don't really, same with any pilot, the actors aren't completely sure of what to do. The writers aren't completely sure of what to do. It shows a lot of backstory. It shows a lot of special effects, especially the saucer separation. And I guess it does a decent enough job of establishing what's going on. It's just not a very interesting story, not a very interesting show to look at. And unfortunately, it's no DS9 pilot, which DS9 has the best pilot of all the Star Treks in terms of, you know, connecting to previous things and building into the future. Star Trek Next Generation does not really do that, which is okay. We will we'll pick up with another episode, The Naked Now, which will be the next episode, which is actually shorter and more story focused. So I think we can actually start cracking into things there. But thank you guys for listening. This pilot episode will hopefully improve too in the future. And once I start to figure out what I'm trying to do here, try the recaps at the beginning, do a more in-depth recap as we go along, and then just sort of my notes about what I noticed as we made it through, anything that I thought was particularly funny or interesting. And sort of build off there. So thank you guys for watching. Check out The Encounter at Farpoint. If you got, you know, you got an hour and a half, so you want to kill, check it out. It's worth watching back then, or just worth watching to see what the show was back then. Not particularly great, but we were soon going to be getting into much better things. And thank you guys for watching. I'll see you next time.